You're listening to The Kylo Show, the podcast where we talk about how to keep your love on no matter what and why whole healthy families are going to save the world. And it starts right now.
Here's a little piece of info as well. At some point, you guys have this heart to do this thing, transform this dark place, so you decide to move there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to live
23
there.
Years ago.
And yeah. to live in
and
the middle of all
this.
And
raise your children.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of our founding verses that really God made very, very evident, I love the way it says in the message, John 1:14, mm-hmm. It says, and God put skin on and moved into our neighborhood.
Mm.
And there's something about proximity. There's something about closeness. There's something about being in the same grocery store and living in the same neighborhood. So we really live in Oak Park. It's a notorious community in Sacramento. It's, some people would say it's the oldest ghetto in Sacramento. We don't call it that, but it kind of gives you some descriptors. Yeah. We love it. There's mm-hmm. so much good that happens there and so many beautiful people, but we've watched God just intersect people's lives and transform them over the last 20, she's been there 20 plus years. My journey there was a little different, but
what was your journey?
You should tell it because it's pretty fun.
I was actually a washed up youth pastor and worship leader. And I was a single dad. I had gone through a divorce and had kind of resigned myself that I went back to construction. I was a bivocational pastor for a while. And then just, when life combusted, I just resigned to what I knew. And I was happy to be a dad, but wasn't doing real well with my walk with Jesus other than I knew he loved me, but I knew ministry was not a part of my future at that point. At least that's what I was convinced of. And mm-hmm. I 2001, I found myself on the corner of Broadway and Martin Luther King. And mind you, like I don't know that I was a professing alcoholic. However, I did use alcohol quite frequently to medicate and mm-hmm. to just, it was a regular part of my life and probably a little bit overuse, if you want to use that word. I was doing what I could to just feel better. And I was at an intersection of Martin Luther King and Broadway in the middle of Oak Park. I was lost trying to find a job. That was back in the day where you didn't have GPS. You had a Thompson's Guide, right, a map that you had to find the cross.
That you could never fold back up.
There's no MapQuest. There's none of that. Yeah. This is pre that. And I'm trying to find this house that I'm working on. And I get to this intersection and I see people and God just like let me see more than what I saw. And I heard God speak to me, said, I'm calling you to this neighborhood. And I was like, God, you're calling the wrong person. I don't know what you're talking about. And I saw kids that had just gotten out of a continuation school, the largest continuation school in Sacramento. And there's five cop cars and there's homeless people. And
this is hilarious.
It's crazy.
I just got a call from God. It was the wrong number.
Right. Well, I mean, that just shows where my heart was. I was convinced God was done with me. And God took this broken man and reminded him that he wasn't done and chased after me in my brokenness. So from that moment, I still didn't have it all figured out. I hadn't met Rochelle yet. I didn't know that she was living and working in this community. I found my way back to a church that the pastor there, Bishop Sherwood Carthen, Bayside of South Sacramento, he just loved on me for about a year and took my two kids, and we got to sit at his dinner table every Saturday or Sunday afternoon and just live life. And he loved me back to health. And I'm serving Jesus today because of that guy. But through that purpose, awesome. Through that season, I met Rochelle, and she was running this little after school program, and she was cute too. I was working my way back into helping with ministry and the worship team there, and met her at that point. And I just something came alive in me, not just seeing how cute she was, but that there was this real thing happening in this community that God had spoken to me 5 years before that, saying, I'm going to call you. I'm like, what is going on? And, you know, I became her best volunteer. I had a truck and started moving things
and
for
you
her.
Could build things.
And I could build things.
Yeah. Yeah. I know how this works. I have a builder.
That's what we know.
I love builders.
And
best gift ever.
Gentlemen, I just want you to listen to this. Ladies love it when you get stuff done.
You
right?
should see the things that he can make out of pallets. Like, he built me this whole, like, seriously, can we stop for a second and talk about how talented Lauren is? You should see our chicken coop. He had these pallets. He's like, babe, don't get rid of those. I'm going to make something. He builds me like this little cute with a tin roof, little to put our wood in the backyard. And sorry, babe, but this man can build.
Yeah, yeah. You and Ben got to get together and build us something grand.
Make stuff.
What I do to decompress is build things. It's my therapy. So,
be worse things.
It's good. Yeah. Be constructive. Yeah.
So you started volunteering for her and her after-school program. So how long has City of Refuge been happening? Like, how old is it?
We're in our 10th year right now. Okay. So it's only been 10 years. A lot has transpired. We've been married. We celebrated our 15th year anniversary and just this last September. And so God has done a lot in a little bit of a time.
Yes.
And it's been crazy journey. We started this little house called the House of Acts. Mm-hmm. And that was the early phases of City of Refuge. Yeah. And our goal, again, was to be a neighbor and to open up our doors and just invite people home. Mm-hmm. And kids that were running the streets, getting into trouble and had nothing else to do, they found their way into the Ditmores, what was our personal home, and we moved out of it and just
Is that the house we went to?
The first house on 38.
The yellow house?
Yeah. We went in the backyard.
So I had been on staff with Youth for Christ for about 17 years. Yeah. And so I ran after school programs in the neighborhood through Youth for Christ, raised my support as a missionary. And then I would have probably stayed there forever. And I remember when my executive director, he was retiring, and we were really this concept of City of Refuge. Yeah. Like, honestly, the Lord just really began to speak to us about the biblical cities of refuge of old. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I even, like, when you talk about you moved your kids into this neighborhood and, like, there's no sacrifice. And here's the thing. When kingdom moves in, neighborhoods don't stay the same.
That's it.
You
know, it's like when kingdoms, when we turn the light on and Danny, you better stop because I have a story for everything.
I know. I got a couple stories I want you to tell.
And you know what? I actually do want to mention that when in 96, 97, I had a little community center in North Sacramento on Lerwick Road. And one night I ended up showing up there, 3351 Lerwick Road. Now, I will tell you this. We have three people on staff right now. One was a young lady who was 13 and in prostitution. Another little boy that had been, you know, assaulted and abused around the corner. Another, a drug dealer that ended up in San Quentin. All three of them are loving Jesus today and are actually on our team from back that. When. Yeah. So it's amazing how things just don't stay the same. And it's not because of us, but we see the presence of God. But turn the light on. 3351, it was a little two-bedroom, one-bath apartment. There was no lights on the street. It was super dark. So you know, back in the day, even like how they've done city development is like we know in those kind of neighborhoods, you turn the lights on. You know, and so people can see. Well, there was no lights. And so we had actually put a light on the porch of our apartment where we ran our after-school programs. And I showed up one day. It had been pouring rain all night. And the manager lived on site. And she said, Rochelle, I have to tell you what happened last night. Mm-hmm. She said, I woke up and I heard just screaming and yelling and fighting. The young woman next door, she had two little children. And the youngest was 3 years old. And she said, I could hear body slamming against the wall. And, you know, back then you live in such a close community. People are afraid of calling the police and different things like that. And she said, but I came out, woke me up out of my sleep. And it was pouring rain, like 2 o'clock in the morning. And she said, I hear this little whimpering. And she said, I looked downstairs and little Amante, who was three, who lived in the duplex next door, had ran over and he was in his little Spider-Man underoos and he was huddled underneath the light at the center. He was in the corner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love what you said about turning the light on. I mean, Jesus just said, you know, be the light of the world. Like Jesus is the light of the world. Be that city on a hill that's not hidden. And I think it's like we often get so consumed about what to do rather than realizing that there has been a light that is that lives inside of us that we just get to turn on and don't hide. And it's amazing what births.
And the biblical city of refuge is a place people ran to.
They ran to.
They ran to be safe. They knew it. It's built into the agreement of culture. If you run to a city of refuge, they will protect you no matter what. No matter what. And belonging is just another word for attachment. Another word for attachment is connection. And that whole thing of
powerful
building, promoting, strengthening connection with people who have been so traumatized by their connections that they've vowed to never make another one. The safest place I could ever be is disconnected from everything.
Including
that trauma is exactly what you guys are facing.
You know, we say to our one of our values in our housing program and with our team is we protect connection, preserve relationship, empower choice. We do not rescue. We do not save. We empower the choices of people. It allows us to release them.
Powerful
it allows
people.
Us to not powerful people.
They're doing the Kylo Fivers. That's what's happening here.
Our opportunity is connection. And if you take it too far and try to control, we ruin relationships when we want more than what people are ready for. And then we empower their choice. And so when they choose these things, we celebrate them. We merely make room for that to happen.
And if you don't stay powerful and you don't manage yourself in all your efforts to transform somebody, your quality of life goes away. Your peace goes away. You're now jacked up with fear and anxiety because of this, that, and the other thing. And so, you know, watching you guys stand in this level of demand, and that's what it is. I mean, you guys stand in the demand. And you manage yourselves. You then get to stay connected to what the Father's doing instead of get caught up in what needs to be done.
The urgent, the now, the chaos.
And we love one another a lot.
That's great.
What a good idea.
Have a great marriage.
It is. What a good idea. Like having a healthy marriage in the middle of this and family, it's like these foundations, if we don't carry them, we can't bring them.
Totally.
And this is like whole healthy families, are going to save the world.
Boom. Bam. That's it.
what a concept. No, it really is, though.
Or at least this part of the world.
It had to happen here first, you know, and that so much of what we do today has been birthed out of our own experience of walking through healing with God. And I remember being that kid, that young 20-something year old kid that was trying to earn God's approval by being on a stage and performing and you know, I just anything I could do to whip up a feeling of God likes me more or God's okay with me. And I just I kind of like bring that into what we do and just know that there's thousands of people living in that same place of, would you just like me? Can I do whatever I need to do to get you to accept me? And you know, when you flip the table over and you realize that God already did that for us.
You're not.
And we can live as loved and accepted people and create that space. It's transforming what
happens. It's the trap of being, or getting sucked into living as a human doing. You know, like I'm only as valuable as what I give to you. That I, you know, the especially a poverty culture is so, it's so entrenched in being pleasing, you know, entertaining, you know, that I'm really only as valuable as either I can make you feel.
Yep. Yes.
Or I can scare you.
Yes. Yep.
You know, yep. And so it's all coming out of my own anxiety. Like yep. I'm performing mm-hmm. for acceptance mm-hmm. or I'm commanding mm-hmm. respect.
And then relationships are just birthed out of transactions and it just yeah. what I can get from you and what I can give yeah. you. And you know, we call that yeah. a relationship.
And so learning to be is some of the oh. first parts mm-hmm. of belonging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You
so
know,
good.
Like yeah. I have to be, I have to find out so who I am, whose yeah. I am,
yep. mm-hmm.
and why I'm here.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. so thank you so much for that. It's the connectedness of I only do that which I see my Father doing, that my Father's will is my bread. That is Jesus's decision. That's not the Father's trump card. You know, that yeah. is not, I'm throwing down the Father card mm-hmm. on you and you have to do what I say. Did Jesus have to go to the cross? No.
Yeah.
He didn't. I mean, this, some people are going to have a hard time with that, but Jesus endured the cross for the joy set before him. Not Jesus did the cross or the Father would have punished him. This, you know, this is some strange leadership dynamics that most people that pull out the God card don't pick up. So what is it that man can't do under the headship of Christ? Well, I think he can do all things through Christ who strengthens you. Mm-hmm. Nothing is impossible. I mean, the freedom under the leadership of the Father and the Son. Mm-hmm. But then we get to, what can't women do under the headship of men?
Well, there's a whole big hole.
Here come the rules. Here comes the list of things because, you know, women can run countries mm-hmm. and they can run cities and they can run Fortune 50 companies, but they can't be elder in a church because that's too much responsibility. That's too much, you know, that. Women can't be trusted with that kind of stuff. So this is not their place. Like, look, you totally don't understand
yeah.
what you're talking about when you make yourself superior, a superior decision maker because of your genitalia. Mm. Like, wow. You know, there's a lot of women that are much more gifted in leadership than a lot of men. Mm-hmm. Woe unto us when we try to jam those ladies underneath that tiny little leadership lid you got there, guy, you know? But that's what happens when you set up a home environment like that, instead of as a partnership, mm-hmm. instead of as we've got to work out listening to each other really well, because primarily mm-hmm. what you will be obeying as a husband is that you have loved and cherished and honored your woman as Christ gave himself up for her. That's your standard, that you give yourself up for her. Honor your mother and father, yes, honor your mother and father. But you live in the home with this woman. This mm-hmm. she is one with you. Mm-hmm. You've separated from your parents. They're a number two, three. They're not a number one human relationship with you. So those kinds of things that are what's protecting your union. And when you throw down the thus saith me mm-hmm. card, then you've just started a very, very dangerous cycle of eliminating eyes and ears and gifts and talents in your decision.
You know, the thing we hear often, and we have for years, is it's not the church's job to build the child or produce some spiritual something in the child. Mm. That's the family's job.
Mm.
It's the church's job to partner with them.
So good.
But there's often this thing that happens where, you know, parents kind of hand their kids over and so, and, you know, this experience of, will you do this for us?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I'd just love to hear kind of the family culture perspective from your seat.
Mm.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's not lots on children's ministry in the Bible. Mm. So Deuteronomy 6, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, all your mind. And this commandment I give you today is to be upon your hearts. Parents, impress this upon your children. But I love that sentence, parents, impress this upon your children. And I think it's no matter the good stuff, the bad stuff, the intention towards, the absence is all impressed upon children. And who we are is impressed upon our children. And so the verse goes on and it talks about, talk about your faith as you walk along the road, as you sit down, as you lie down at night. And so there's just that kind of, there's some guidelines for what it looks like to truly articulate and impress upon children. And so it is, I do see that is, I actually think it's both the children's pastor's role, but it's also a school's role to partner alongside families. But at the same time, you know, back in England, and I know there's kind of similar things here, about 50 years ago, kids would come to school malnourished. Mm-hmm. And so they ended up giving free milk. Mm-hmm. And then they ended up giving some free meals. Mm-hmm. And so schools actually often say, well, social emotional learning or emotional health isn't necessarily something the school should do. But if the child is hungry, they can't learn. If the child is kind of got so much trauma in here that they can't listen. Yeah. And it's the same in church. So there is that thing of what do we do? Do we just go, well, there's a lack. It's not really our responsibility. Sure. And so everything we can do to give the parents tools and to equip parents and to help them know there's a lot of great stuff you can impress upon your children. Yeah. It's like that for me is always the number one message as a children's pastor. But and yet at the same time to go, well, we have your child with us right now. What can we do too? So I think exactly like you shared, Ben, it's both and.
Yeah.
But good. Yeah, and I think interestingly for schools, more and more schools are seeing how do we build the relationship with parents and what can we do to kind of equip them? Because they know that even on academic learning, so much happens in the home. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. I think that's what we've been on a journey so much the last couple of years with education with our kids is finding a school that truly believes in a partnership with the family. Mm. And, you know, I'm really grateful for it. And I think what you're doing is phenomenal. And I was in children's ministry for years. I mean, I didn't have your role, but I would have been one of your teammates had we still been there.
Yes.
You missed out. I'm sorry. But, you know, it is such a struggle, especially if you have families that have a desire to produce family culture, but they don't know how to steward it. Like, how do you feel like you're able to give those practical tools to these families? Like, how are you helping families in their culture?
Yeah, I think one thing, one of the great things that we can do is we can tell stories. Mm. And so parents sometimes know more of the Bible than they think. I mean, even if there's just one Bible story, it's nothing quite like you can sit down and read a Bible story, but actually telling a Bible story from memory, read it maybe beforehand, I think it's just a beautiful thing. And I honestly think one of the most beautiful sights in the world is when a child just postures their heart to listen to a Bible story being told. And if there's no images, sometimes you get to see that. And that's just a beautiful thing. And so I think that's just one great thing that we as a family, it was about a year ago, we spent about 4 months kind of going through the Bible, just seeing how many stories we could remember, and we kind of told them. And that was just, sometimes we'd do like this nighttime routine of kind of tucking in our kids and praying, and it can end up feeling quite flat. You're like, okay, what do you want to pray for? Couldn't really think of anything. And you're like, okay.
More dessert.
Lord, you just bless them. What's that Ephesians prayer again? I'd just be like, you could just kind of pray the same thing over and over. But when you tell a Bible story, suddenly it opens a whole dialogue of different things to pray
that's
about.
Great.
Yeah. That's what I remember you doing.
Totally.
I mean, I can still remember those moments going to bed as a child and him stories.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I used to just buy books. Mm-hmm. We bought that picture Bible.
First Bible.
It's this thick.
It's white cover. It's the same.
Yeah. It's got the little cartoons
we have
in there.
It upstairs for our kids.
We told so many Bible stories. But then as they grew up, I remember telling stories about amazing missionaries and revivalists. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I found this a series of books, and so I would just sit and ran, and we would just tell stories about, I forgot his name.
William Branham?
I pulled that out of my memory, but the stories that were in that book were, I want to say Elliot. It was either his first name or his last name, but it was a name. But he was a missionary that went out into this, unreached area, and they killed him.
Wow.
You know, you're like, wow. But the story leading up to it was just phenomenal. I wasn't trying to scare the children. I was just
stay well, kids.
But we were trying to talk about, you know, like, this is stuff you give your life for. This isn't just, you know, stuff you go to church for. And this isn't just stuff that's going to work out great for you. You know, if you're a Christian, your life's going to be easier. It's like, no, this it could very well end up in you giving everything.
It's beautiful.
In a weird way, it's beautiful, but it's biblical.
Yeah. But I think it's, I mean, even sharing some of our faith journeys and our stories too, just the idea that this is the Bible story wasn't a book which is now finished with it. We get to live in God's story now. We can be part of it.
My kids always wanted me to tell them stories of when I got a spanking when I was little.
That's true.
Dad, tell us a story when you got a spanking.
Do it again, God.
Do it again,
children. Yeah, that's the funny stuff.
Yeah.
Who beat you up?
When the school or the church, you know, they feel they interface with the children who are malnourished, mm-hmm. you know, or abused or whatever in that earlier, you know, concept of the church and the schools taking care of your children. I mean, that's the kind of the danger of not leading your family culture is that someone else will notice that there is a void there and they'll fill it.
That's right.
And that's how, you know, all this is getting, you know, like when you drop the hose in the mud puddle, if it's off, the hose gets full of mud. But if the hose is on, the puddle gets full of water, you know, and that's what you're trying to do is you're trying to keep the offense going, you know, the light is on for your children. So when they go into these darker places, they are impacting that instead of being brainwashed or being groomed to be someone that their family doesn't recognize and they don't recognize as their family.
That's right.
I would, just on that point right there, I was going to ask kind of both of you, does it feel true that one of the experiences of watching or things that comes up is parents that often don't feel equipped.
Don't know where to start.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like they hear that and they go, I want that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just don't know what to do from here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
I think one of the greatest truths is that God is always with us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so being present is just enormous. I remember our, my eldest was probably about 3, maybe 4, and my youngest, a year younger, so 3 or 4, or 2 or 3. My math's not too bad.
I was noticing that. I wasn't going to point it out.
Wait. 4. And I just remember being downstairs and just hearing this kind of screaming noise. I won't do it into the mic, but it's kind of screaming noise, and then it was off. And then screaming noise, and then it was off. And so I kind of went upstairs, and I could just hear my eldest, who's definitely a teacher at heart, was like, God is always with us. Yes, even in the dark. Yes, even in the dark. And then she turned the light out. My youngest would go. And she's like, no.
She's trying, no. I'm leading you to your faith.
This is an object lesson here, okay? Now you need to be with me.
It went on for ages. It was so fun. She's like, God's with us. I'm going, okay, God's with us. Even in the dark. Yeah, but don't do that. And so it just went on and on. But it's just this profound truth that God is with us. And I read this phrase, Emmanuel, Shalom, just Emmanuel, God is always with us. Shalom, the peace that comes from that. I think one thing we can do is we can be present our kids. Yeah. So
I think being present requires that we put away the to-do list as as a parent. I was listening to a book and they were just talking about if, you know, sharing roles with the family and kind of getting this responsibility built in. 7 habits. You'll be so excited that I
what?
I know. But he's just talking about how who wants to be responsible for the buying the food, paying the bills, and he goes through all these things. And all of a sudden, mom and dad have a 60-hour work week. And I think that that's what gets our attention as parents is the mountain of to-do minimizes how easy it is to just be like 5 minutes of that, you know, attention and that purpose and that being present lasts and makes such a deposit in our kids.
So true.
That's good.
And it is hard though, because the to-dos feel like they are urgent and they have to be attended to when, I mean, we give 5 minutes to Instagram, we give 20 minutes to whatever it is, and then we no longer have that 5 minutes. Mm. So it does feel like a discipline to you know, put your money where your mouth is. Are you really trying to create a culture that's stewarding something? Mm. And I think all the time parents are like, well, where do you even start on having a, you know, developing this spiritual journey with your kids? And I love that you said it's telling a story. It's that simple. It doesn't have to be this, okay, we need to set the stage. We need Brian and Jen, come on in. Okay, we're going to, Torvalds, I want you to come in and we're going to, everyone be quiet and close your eyes, put your hands out. And that's how this is, it has to happen. It's usually very messy and disorganized, which kind of feels like how God is anyways. He doesn't really like to do it the way we want to.
Stories are like magic. I mean, I have to say...
Well, we don't say magic.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Supernatural gifts from the...
Yeah, they're powerful.
Easier.
We can cut that magic word out, right?
Just didn't want anybody...
They're like hocus pocus.
Yeah, you don't have to read the comments, okay? We have to read the comments.
Yeah, I finish here, I'm out. And then you guys have to do the rest.
So what's your magic that you're going to talk about?
Stories. It's just, it's incredible. I mean, I've, as a family, we've tried a little bit of the kind of, hey, let's have a little prayer time. Mm-hmm. To be honest, just getting Jules to keep quiet.
She is here. We can give her the microphone to defend herself.
She'll defend herself in a minute.
But she's saying cut.
But that's, you know, the beauty of, you know, that self-awareness piece that you were talking about, and how much, you know, being aware of ourself and being able to bring that into our exchange and vulnerability.
And so the vulnerability aspect brings us into this place of valuing feedback. Mm-hmm. You know, like, okay, I'm realizing that I'm designed in such a way that I fit with the rest of the puzzle. Mm. I'm not the picture. Like so many people like to think, I'm the picture. Let's adjust all the things in your picture mm-hmm. that need to be more like my picture so that I can surround myself with myself so my anxiety goes down because I don't really have to try to be around myself. Yeah. I actually love being around myself. I just surround myself with people who think and behave predictably the way I would. Like this is, unfortunately I didn't marry someone like that. I married someone who the opposites attract, and I can't believe how different they are and how they won't yield to my discipleship. Mm-hmm. So all those pieces are kind of swirling around us when I recognize I'm a puzzle piece. Mm. I fit in the overall puzzle and design of our family. Even our marriage, mm-hmm. but our family, our society, you know, our church environment, our whatever community I plug into, I'm a puzzle piece. Mm-hmm. And as long as I recognize that, then I begin to see the value of your experience of me. Mm-hmm. And I see why I need to be courageous enough to communicate my experience of you, to protect our relationship, to walk in the truth together so that we can build trust. Yeah. And therein is the freedom. You know, ongoing, we've built trust in relationships. I've built trust in my marriage. I've built trust in my family. I've built trust in my community. In doing so, I'm free. I'm free to be myself, and you get to be you around me, and we all flourish together.
Mm-hmm. I know. You know, it's hard to receive feedback if it feels like the person giving it doesn't actually believe in you. Mm-hmm. It's hard to take that feedback as you're going to be with me in the process as I walk this out mm-hmm. and alongside of me. So that's where I think feedback becomes so hard, is that if it's received by somebody that's not willing to be on the journey with you, you're like, well, I don't want to take this because I don't know that you're going to be patient with me to learn mm-hmm. or encourage me when I am making adjustments, mm-hmm. however big or small they may be. Mm-hmm. But I think that's the part where, you know, the person giving feedback has to be willing to kind of walk out the process with mm-hmm. the other person.
And realize that when I compare my strengths to your weakness, you're going to lose 100% of the time.
Yes.
And this is parenting, you know, like parents are like, hey, be responsible. Mm-hmm. You know, take out the trash. Do your stuff. You know how responsible I am.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, well, you're 70. Yeah, well, that's okay. Well, it took me a little while, but, you know, I need you to get on board. That temptation to compare my strength to other people's weaknesses kind of demonstrates that I'm not aware. Mm-hmm. I'm not paying attention to what I'm doing and how I'm treating another person. So that's where I need feedback of your experience when I compare my strength to your weaknesses.
Yeah.
Like, how does it feel? It feels hurtful mm-hmm. and it feels scary. I'm scared that you're going to reject me after you judge me.
Yeah.
And I'm very scared of that. Like, okay. And I feel powerless. So I want to say, yikes, ouch, whoa, all in one acronym. Yeah.
Yeah. I love the spin of, you know, vulnerability and feedback and feeling believed in, you know, all part of a process of understanding what it can produce and really the telling the truth and not bringing judgment.
Mm-hmm.
That's a probably big thing to be thinking about as we're mm-hmm. moving towards getting healthy.
And feedback obviously isn't all, I'm having a problem with you.
Yeah.
But maybe we should start putting it together in, you know, feedback and affirmation or something. But there has to be the nourishing aspect mm-hmm. of my comfort with both, because otherwise I just sound upset and critical all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only time that you want to be intimate with me is when you're upset.
Yeah.
And I don't mean intimate in the most, you know, happy way. I mean intimate like, oh, let's walk in the light together so I can point out what's wrong with you. Like, I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, there has to be the balance of I really love this about you. I really value. Mm-hmm. I so enjoy when you do this, or when we experience this together, or that moment that we had. I really enjoyed you. Mm-hmm. There has to be enough of that to where we realize that we are dinging the bell, and like, okay, we're being successful, and we have to grow, and we have mm-hmm. to adjust.
Ben and I talk about this a lot with couples that we work with in, you know, chasing after love languages. Because
mm-hmm.
a lot of times there's knowledge of the spouse's love language, but there's not very good execution of that. So mm-hmm. the message, I love you, gets lost, right? Mm-hmm. So they get lots of feedback of you're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants to keep doing anything if they're doing it wrong. Oh. And so we're trying to encourage people, give the feedback of when they're successful, because that feedback of success gives courage to try again.
Yeah. I'm watching you learn the piano, you know, and I mean, just imagine if you had to learn to play the piano and there was no sound.
No, I wouldn't do it.
Nobody would do it. Nobody would do it, you know, and the only time the sound came out was when you messed it up.
Oh, gosh, I definitely would not do it.
You wouldn't do it. All that feedback that you're getting, because you're nailing that, you're like, this sounds like the song I'm trying to play right here. This is awesome. That is what keeps you in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I think when you get to stand in the truth and be vulnerable and have both of those experiences, it just helps us to keep growing and mm-hmm. to achieve the marvel that we want in personal responsibility.
Boom. Look at all our vulnerabilities paying off here.
Yeah. So good.
And it helps us to build partners.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, again, we just had Giving Tuesday not very long ago, and a lot of partners gave to Loving on Purpose. And it is really encouraging and really fun. I think the other thing that happens is we get lots of testimonies or prayer requests or just stories of people that have been transformed, whether it's from Keep Your Love On or The Kylo Show or the parenting. So, I mean, there's so many different ways that I'm discovering that people find us mm-hmm. And then have chosen to partner with us and really grateful for it. And so really thank you for showing up in our world and doing your part.
It's great feedback for us, mm-hmm. you know, to realize that, you know, somebody like a lot of folks are willing to commit to $25 a month and end up in our Kylo community online community that we're doing together. Mm-hmm. It's a healthy place where like-minded people are getting together, sharing thoughts and needs, and getting some really great regular input besides just this yeah. podcast.
I think the last one or one of the last ones I saw that we do these monthly calls with the Kylo community is, you know, there's a lot of vulnerability that was on display.
Yeah.
And you kind of doing a coaching session with these people.
So fun.
And you know, I think even when people call in and give a testimony, there's that's in it. A place of vulnerability that they're willing to share with everyone that's listens to the show. So yeah. really grateful. And if you're not a partner but want to be a partner, go ahead and check out lovingonpurpose.com. And there's a donate button. I think it's in the right-hand corner, if I'm remembering our website.
That's what we were instructed by the web designers would be the most effective place to put okay. that button. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Thanks for listening. Never miss an episode of The Kylo Show by subscribing to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or watch us on the Loving on Purpose YouTube channel. Don't forget to submit your questions and testimonies to thekyloshow.com. The Kylo Show is produced by Ali Armading, co-produced by Ashley Beck and Anna Hill, sound engineer and edited by Taylor Silk, and show promoter Christian Zamora. Don't forget, whole healthy families, gonna save the world.